Good evening, and welcome to Art World Innovators, exploring stories of innovation in the art world. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Our next guest this evening is Claire Lilly, Curator and Director of Programming at the Yorkshire Sculpture Park, an innovative and international center for modern and contemporary sculpture celebrating over 40 years of art without walls. Yorkshire Sculpture Park is located in the heart of the Yorkshire area of England, situated in 500 acres of fields, hills, woodlands, lakes, gardens, with a rich heritage of the 18th century Breton Hall estate. Peter Murray, teacher at the former Breton College on the estate, founded the sculpture park in 1977, becoming the first sculpture park in the UK and now the largest of its kind in Europe. The YSP, as it's called, is committed to supporting emerging and established artists and continuing a strong learning program of workshops, internships, artists' residencies, events, and a high standard of exhibitions. Here to tell us more about the sculpture park from director and a curator's perspective is Claire Lilly. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Yorkshire Sculpture Park in the outdoor landscape is truly a unique and dynamic place for bringing sculpture into the open air for viewers to explore some of the most innovative and highly renowned sculptors' works. Can you tell us a little about the vision and the history of Yorkshire Sculpture Park?
Well, the Sculpture Park really developed from an 18th century landscape. It's an area of land that's been privately owned for about 1,000 years and run by a succession of different families. And just after the war, after the Second World War, the last family moved off the estate and it was purchased by the local authority, by the education authority, in fact, particularly by a man called Sir Alec Clegg, who was a really extraordinary educationalist in the north of England. And he developed Breton Hall College, which was a college for the arts and for teacher training. And as you said, Peter Murray was a teacher in the college, and in 1977, started to curate exhibitions in the grounds of the college, and really with a very specific idea of engaging a public for whom sculpture and contemporary art was really unknown, but enabling an access to sculpture and landscape that had really been unforeseen in this country, and in many ways has never really been repeated in the way that we do at the Sculpture Park today.
When you're talking about landscape, and we were talking earlier with a landscape architect for his perspective on designing landscapes for city parks, from your curatorial perspective, can you describe how the landscape comes into play as you curate and site sculptures in the open air, maybe citing an example?
Well, landscape feeds into absolutely everything that we do. We have a number of buildings here. We have some very beautiful galleries, and we curate exhibitions within those spaces. But even so, those buildings themselves have huge windows, and so the idea of landscape coming in to the building and being able to see landscape through the windows is really important. I think in terms of how we curate exhibitions, we have lots of different characters of landscape here. So we have an area which used to be a deer park, which is a kind of 18th century parkland. We've got woodland areas around lakes. We've got some quite formal gardens. And we've got really quite rough ground. And so the sculpture that we curate within those different environments, in a sense, plays with the landscape and plays with the experience of that landscape. So, for example, at the moment, we have a really beautiful Ai Weiwei sculpture, which is his ring of circle of zodiac heads. And it was really important to be able to have those sculptures in a place that could be seen from quite a long distance, but could also sort of form an intimate relationship for people as they experience the work. And so they're sited in an area which is surrounded by really beautiful trees, very large trees, and you can see the works from quite a distance. And those journeys across the landscape are a really integral part of the experience here. And the energy that you get from walking across the landscape is fantastically important.
You obviously have a deep passion for indoor and outdoor curating and discovering more about the artists and presenting their works in the best light possible. As you envision an installation, what do you imagine the audience might experience, feel, and sense as they walk through it?
This is a very sensory place. It's really visceral. So the weather plays a huge part in the way that people experience sculpture. We always have a body of work by Henry Moore here. Henry Moore was born in this area. In a sense, he and Barbara Hepworth's work as the kind of foundation stones to the sculpture park. And I have been coming here, well, I've been working here for 26 years. I've been coming here for longer than that. And I've been looking at sculpture over that period of time, even the same sculpture. And it changes completely in relation to the weather and the time of day, the light that plays on it, the rain and the snow. And when we're citing sculptures, we're very aware of that visceral relationship, of the relationship that people are going to form with the sculpture and how that sculpture is going to be enjoyed and appreciated over a period of time. And that's very important too in the way that we cite work. And we have a piece here by James Turrell, which is a sky space. It was developed by James within an 18th century deer shelter structure. It's a work that has become incredibly important to people within the district, within the region, and really very far beyond. And of course, James Turrell attracts people from all around the world into these spots, these very meditative, very quiet places in which you contemplate the sky. And of course, here in Yorkshire, as in most places of the world, you're experiencing a weather and a climate which is changing all of the time, and in a sense articulating that space and allowing you to get a sense of where you are in the world.
As part of that experience, and as an educator and founder of the YSP, Peter Murray explains on the website the importance of education and how it underpins everything you do at the Sculpture Park. Can you tell us about the range of programs you offer?
Well, the education here is hugely important, and in fact, the very first employee here was an educator rather than a curator, and we have developed a type of learning which comes from the Bauhaus and from a movement called the Basic Design Movement, which was set out to involve children in creativity and learning by discovery, and with the idea that that would have really far-reaching beneficial social impact on children. This was a kind of a post-Second World War idealism, and it's an idealism that we play out today. We think it's incredibly important that children and young people have direct contact with artists, with materials, and with the processes of making sculpture. So we now have a program that involves over 40,000 people every year, and almost all of that program is delivered by artist educators. So they're artists who have developed ways of working with a whole range of people, not necessarily children. And we're working really with people from preschool age children right through to third age and postgraduate learners. The program falls into three very important areas for us. The first is formal learning. That's the schools and colleges. And so they can come here, people can come here and spend an entire day here if they want to, looking at sculpture, talking about sculpture, but very, very importantly, making. So making is a really vital part of the program. And then we have part of the learning, which is the second part of learning, which is around family learning, family engagement. And we have lots of tools, lots of activities that families can engage with. And as part of that program, we're working with many people who are on the fringes of society and who are very hard to reach in terms of culture. So, for example, we've been working with a group of young women whose children are on the at-risk register, and they've been working here over about 2 years, really forming their own support group, learning how to be with their children, how to make sculpture, how to think about art, how to create art, and for those the benefits of that to sort of really work into their families and their social structures. It's been an extremely important and successful program. And then the third area of learning is in well-being, and that's in activities like mindful looking, so just slowing down and looking at sculpture, talking about sculpture, and allowing people to simply be in this very, very beautiful environment and to make the most of it. And that program includes things like yoga, poetry, all sorts of things which are really of great benefit to the very many people who come here.
It certainly does draw from a lot of different areas. You also have exciting internships available for university students. How does one apply and become involved in those internships?
Well, generally speaking, it's through the university. So York is one, Leeds University, York St John, but also from all around the world. And, you know, I would invite people to either write to us individually and to see what programs that we have that we think they would benefit from or we would benefit from. Generally speaking, well, I was going to say internships are over sort of a week to 3 weeks, but in actual fact, we've had people who've been coming here for much longer than that, but those are generally research projects that they're doing as part of a PhD or another dissertation. But there are many opportunities for people to come on, have the experience of working in this environment, not just in art history, but in visitor management, in marketing, and all the related activities that make a place like Yorkshire Sculpture Park function.
And you also have a new centre coming up that'll open in 2019. And what is the new architecture about, and any special artists you might be expecting to celebrate the opening?
It's a building that's been designed by a young architectural practice called Field and Fowles. And it's not a very big building, but it's extremely beautiful. It sort of sits in a depression in the landscape. It's in fact what was an 18th century quarry. And of course, this is a very protected landscape, so we're limited in the kind of buildings that we can make here. But for us, it was incredibly important to have a new entrance into the park because we have around 500,000 visitors every year. And there are points during the summer where we simply have to close down the park to any more visitors because we don't have enough car parking facilities. So that building has a car park, and that's important. But I think as important as that was to have another entrance into the park. This is on the very far eastern reaches of our land. People will be able to use that building as a restaurant. There's a very lovely gallery, which I'll talk about in a moment, and a shop, of course. So it's a business for us. It functions as a business. But it's also another walk. It's another way of experiencing landscape. And it's the only place in the park from which you can see these very huge and very beautiful lakes in the way that you can from that building. And so the building invites people to make this journey across the landscape and to discover the sculptures within the landscape. And the first exhibition that we have there is by two artists who are based in New Delhi. They're called Thukral and Tagra. And they're creating an exhibition which is really a very participatory experience and draws on, it's a very complicated project, I have to say, but draws on the experience of farmers within India who have one of the highest suicide rates within India is from farmers because of all of the problems that they are facing in terms of conflict within their industry, particularly small farmers whose work is being threatened by major corporations. And the exhibition gives you an inroad into understanding that, but also a way of participating in the experience, in the exhibition of learning about the experience of farmers through wrestling. And so we're actually creating a kind of a wrestling arena within the gallery, which people will be able to participate in.
That sounds really exciting.
Yeah.
Well, we're just running out of time, so I'd like to thank you very much for being on Art World Innovators. We appreciate you joining us and telling us about Yorkshire Sculpture Park and sharing your insight on the art of curating art without walls.
That's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Claire Lilly, Curator and Director of Programming at the Yorkshire Sculpture Park in the UK. For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Art World Innovators on UMFM 101.5. Our guest this evening is Peter Ambi, co-owner of Last Resort in Copenhagen, an art gallery that is all about experiencing art. Peter is passionate about art that stays with you long after you've seen it. Last Resort is a contemporary platform for Danish and international emerging artists, exhibited in a unique environment that encourages interaction and conversation, things that Peter recognizes are just as important as the art itself. He represents artists that work on a wide range of media, from painting to installations, photography, and video, and has a special interest in conceptual art. He recently participated and had a popular booth at Artissima, Italy's most important contemporary art fair held annually in Torino. Peter has long held an interest in art, spending many summer vacations at the Copenhagen studio of his older brother, Balder Ulrich, who encouraged him to open a gallery. Fortunately, Peter took his advice. Peter is speaking with us tonight about the gallery Last Resort from the perspective of a contemporary art gallery owner and innovator in the art world. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
When you posted an article on Spike Art Magazine's website about going out in Copenhagen, you wrote not only from the perspective of an art gallery co-owner of Last Resort, but also as an art collector based in Copenhagen, an importer of luxury foods, and an amateur DJ. Can you elaborate on your background and multiple business ventures and how this has contributed to your current success as an art gallery owner?
The extra titles are maybe a bit far-fetched. I am a co-owner of a small business where we import luxury foods. We import caviar from a farm in Germany and have our own small caviar label. And unfortunately, we've just decided to close it down. It's wonderful product, but it's a side business for all of us, so we don't really have enough time to handle all the small business parts. The amateur DJ part is exactly what it is. I'm not a professional DJ. I do have an interest in music, and where I think it's as much a social thing as the music thing. And when I was in my early 20s, I was running some nightclubs. It's also a very interesting social space, which I also think the gallery has some of the same elements. It is, a gallery is a much more static and somehow boring or frightening environment. But I really wish for a part of the art experience to also be to have a social element.
So your background did help you get started in the art gallery. And how did you come to naming your gallery Last Resort?
Well, it's a bit odd because when I was just starting my gallery, I was looking for a space. And I found a beautiful space close to the airport in Copenhagen, which was really sort of the last stop before no man's land. But there was the metro had just been extended and had a station right next door. And unfortunately, I didn't get the space, but I had this idea that it should be called the Last Resort because it would be sort of a travel for people. I think it could have multiple meanings. And I never used it, and I ended up with a space in the center of the city, a smaller space. A couple of years ago, I merged with another gallerist, an old friend, Andreas, and we were discussing what names we should have. Our respective galleries had been named after ourselves, and neither one of us would want it to be, you know, one of these gallery names for the combination of names. And I said, well, I have this old idea for a gallery called Last Resort. I think it could maybe work for us because I think it has a lot of, for me, it has multiple meanings, but I also think it has some abstract qualities as I also enjoy in a lot of art. So that's what we chose. It had the result that when we announced the merger, we sent out a newsletter. We made sort of a small GIF animation trying to illustrate that his gallery, Henningsen Gallery, and Peter Ambu Gallery was now going to be Last Resort in a very simple way and tried to explain it in a very simple way. And even though I had explained most of it, maybe I hadn't mentioned the name for my mother, but she wrote to me straight away and started calling me and started writing, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm extremely well. Are you sure? Do you want me to? I'll come straight to your house now. If you need me, like I'm a bit puzzled about this. And she, for some reason, she thought it was such a dark name that she didn't understand that it was our announcement of the merger, but she thought it was a suicide letter, which is a bit extreme, but that's my mother.
So you represent Danish and an international set of emerging and contemporary artists. Can you tell us about some of the artists you represent and exhibit in your gallery?
Yes, certainly. Well, when I opened the gallery, I'd been in another setup where we were working with some extremely established artists, and I was a bit tired of always feeling that you had to ask another gallery permission and that you would be last in line for the works and so on, and you had to spend too much time on discussing paperwork, rather than working with the artist. So when I opened by myself, I thought that it would be a good idea to work with only with artists from my own generation, but from all over the world, where we could sort of grow together. The program is still based on this. I never wanted to restrict it to any kind of medium. I don't want to restrict it to any specific type of art, but say there's been very little, never really exhibited figurative painting, which is, on another note, very popular in Denmark, but never been part of our main interest. And also, I've definitely broken with, like, this was a kind of a dogma to that we all had to be the same age and grow together and so on. But the artist I probably spend most time with today is at least double my age and is a very established Swedish artist who lived in France for a lot of years called Gun Godillo. I'm also, as we speak, I just coming from a prize ceremony where she received the Nils Vessel Bakke Grant, which is one of the main art prizes in Denmark. And she's been showing all over the world and with some of the greatest galleries, Beiler in Basel and Denise René in Paris. And then at the moment, we're preparing an exhibition with Justin Morin, who's a French artist who works with sculpture and draperies, sort of. It is draperies as a sculpture is his main thing, and where it's usually bases it on an actual image that he makes into a completely abstract gradient and then sculpts this printed silk cloth that he uses for the draperies. And then we will probably be too long for you to list all the artists, but we have two Swedish artists, two French artists, Japanese artists who is based in France, two American artists, and in the spring we'll show Portuguese artists, two other American artists, all new to the program. And then we work with a young Danish artist group, and where they and Gun Godillo are the only artists we work with that are actually Copenhagen-based.
And an important component of the exhibitions are your openings or vernissages to introduce your artists. Can you give us a few details about organizing these and their importance to the artists and the exhibitions?
Yes. Well, this is something we've been experimenting with a lot because it's a really strange thing. The difficult thing for a lot of artists, which I really understand the frustration, which my brother has also had. I remember this from my childhood that he had a lot, was that when you're an artist, you're very much alone. You're alone in your studio, you work alone with the work, and it takes a long time. Like, it might take months and months to prepare for an exhibition. So I think the main importance is really for the artist after this long, enormous work that they have put into creating the exhibition is that they meet some people who actually enjoy it and who are there to see the work. And that's where we've been experimenting. I think for a lot of openings, it's unfortunately just a place that people use to get free drinks. We grew pretty tired of a lot of strange people coming if we had an opening on a Friday night, always complaining about if there was not enough drinks or getting extremely drunk and never engaging with the art. And we moved the openings to early Saturday afternoon to try to avoid this and avoid a part of the crowd because there's, of course, a lot of people we want to see there. Besides the artist peers, we also want to see our friends and family and collectors. I must say it's been very difficult to maintain these Saturday afternoon openings. We even had some, you know, we were showing some new foreign artists that there's not anyone who knows the artist in Denmark. They don't have any network here, and it might only be our parents who show up in the end, which can be a bit comic, but it can also be. I remember with the first exhibition we had, the Justin that we were opening with on Friday, it was the only four people that showed up were my parents, the French ambassador, and the cultural attaché, which was a good audience in the end because we had a good time to speak to the ambassador and the director of the French Culture Institute, which is rare, but they had set off some time to be there, and we probably wouldn't have a chance if all these people who only comes for the free drinks were there.
This month you also had a booth at Artissima, the 2018 Italy's most important annual contemporary art fair focusing on experimentation and research. Being that your artists fit that profile, what are the benefits to your artists and your gallery by participating in an art fair?
This is a very difficult question because I think for a lot of years, I think, especially if you're in an outpost, like Copenhagen is an outpost somehow, is not a center of the art world, you'll have to you want to work with contemporary art, international contemporary art, you need to go and meet your clients because not everyone are going to come to you. And the art fairs has been an extremely important way to meet a lot of new clients. And fortunately, I always thought it was a terrible way to show art because you mix too many things together. But still, I can enjoy it, so I appreciate it. And unfortunately, the concept has grown so popular that there's a lot of mega fairs and a lot of important fairs out there, too many for the collectors to actually digest. It becomes so extremely expensive that it's also something that is closing a lot of even very established galleries that are not mega galleries with an enormous budget. Fair can easily cost you, on the lower end, cost you $15,000 for exhibiting a couple of days. And I think that's tough for most small businesses. I think it's definitely been tough for us, especially some of the years where we've been participating in a lot of fairs. I think most busy year we were participating in 8 fairs around the world. That's really a lot of expenses you need to pay up front or several months before the art fair, and you never know whether it's going to be worth it or not. But I usually come back with from Matissima, I came back really, really positive. There's a lot of great people there and a lot of great interest in, it was a solo booth with Concordio. I met them. We've been there, I think this was our 4th time, and the first years the Italians were the Italian collectors were very reluctant speaking to us. We really felt outside. I feel that we've slowly been more and more accepted, and this year there were some amazing people who showed interest and spoke to us or we got in contact with. So that's definitely important. I would never have met them in Copenhagen.
Well, we're just running out of time, and I'd like to thank you so much for being on our show and sharing your insight and perspectives on running your own gallery. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you so much, Susan.
That was Peter Amby, gallery owner, speaking with us from Copenhagen. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and we thank you for listening to Art World Innovators here on UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Join us again next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. for more on today's innovators in the art world.